Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. When we go to the polls this November, we should all feel confident that our elections are secure and that every vote will be counted. Free and fair elections are the cornerstone of democracy. They give legitimacy to our governments, accountability to our people, and trust to our institutions. But today, only 37% of Americans believe the 2024 election will be both fair and open. 43% of us say we have serious doubts about its upcoming integrity, which is why we here at All Sides are devoting the next hour to election integrity. And we begin with a new organization created to ensure trust in our election results. It's called the Democracy Defense Project. And the face of this information campaign in Ohio are former Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell and former Democratic U.S. Representative Zach Space. Mr. Blackwell, Mr. Space, welcome to All Sides.
Good to be with you.
Can you start by explaining what the Democracy Defense Project is and how each of you were recruited to the campaign?
The Democracy Defense Project is at its heart dedicated to making sure that our system is transparent and that it is also willing to speak truth into the system. There are a lot of false narratives that are associated with elections, and we hope to be truth tellers in a bipartisan way, because we fundamentally believe and understand that in our constitutional republic, where voters have direct power to select those who govern, we have to have confidence and full engagement, maximum engagement of citizens in the process. So that's what we're here to do, is to make sure that we shine lights in dark corners, beat back false narratives, and give not only transparency but belief in the integrity of the system.
And that's right. And in your intro, you talked about the electoral process being the cornerstone of our democracy. And it's absolutely essential that we maintain faith in that. And what we, Ken and I, and the organization that we are here on behalf of, what we bring is a bipartisan perspective. Oftentimes you hear allegations around the integrity of the electoral process, whether it works or whether it doesn't work, coming from one side or the other, the political spectrum. And the effort here is to provide reassurance to voters made by folks who have been involved in the process over the course of many years to let them know that, look, your vote will be counted. It will be counted accurately. We have the most efficient, most accurate, safest, most transparent voting process in the entire world. And it's something we should be celebrating, not denigrating.
So seven states were initially chosen by the Democracy Defense Project, and the other six are battleground states. Why do you think they picked Ohio as number seven?
Well, because I think we're going to have, in the senatorial race, we're going to have a hotly, aggressively contested election. We want to make sure that people understand the strength, transparency of our system, so that however that election turns out, that people have confidence that it was a decision of the electorate.
What would you say is the goal of the project? Is it establishing trust, ensuring integrity? Like, what is the main force behind this?
The main force is, again, to reinforce confidence in the process. We are not, getting involved in the details associated with the rules and the regulations associated with the electoral process. We have a very distributive electoral process in this state, in this country. Some states handle some of those rules and regulations differently than others. That's not where we come in. Basically, what we are advocating for is, like in a football or a baseball game, when an umpire or referee makes a call, you may dispute that call, but once that decision is made, it's done. Let's move on to something else. And, there is nothing more important in terms of our ongoing ability to govern in this country as a representative democracy than restoring faith and instilling faith in the electorate.
And we really do have a much easier track to run than a lot of other states, given the way Ohio's electoral system and election administration system is structured. You know, we have 88 counties, 88 county boards of elections, two Democrats, two Republicans on each of those boards. And for the most part, folks get along, make tough calls. But look, this is a human enterprise. You do have irregularities. You do have missed calls, keeping with the baseball analogy. But we have a system that allows us to play that out. We've tried to establish, once that call is made, let's get on with it.
We also want to take your calls this hour. If you have questions about our election process or about voting, we're going to be taking them later this hour. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email allsides at wosu.org. Ken, I want to talk about 2020, because you questioned the results of the 2020 election, going so far as to sign a group statement from the Conservative Action Project declaring Donald Trump the, quote, lawful winner of that election. Do you still believe that to be true?
Oh, I believe that at that time. There were points that we were contesting across probably about five states. And we took our position going into the whole adjudication process. But once the call was made, once Biden was declared the winner, we in fact said he was the winner, period. You know, so that's why when I go back and say, look, there are going to be the points that are debated and adjudicated. That happened in 2004. I had 38 suits against me and our election system in Ohio, saying that George Bush had not earned the right to electoral college votes. Well, we played it out. We won, and people got on with the program.
Zach, I was going to ask about that, because in 2004, we did have members of Congress here in Ohio who denied that George Bush had won the state. Do you feel like this is problematic no matter which party it's coming from?
Absolutely. Obviously, most recent allegations and probably the most severe allegations that have occurred around the integrity of the process have occurred since 2020. But this is a process that's been going on for many years, and it's what we don't want is for this to become common practice. Every election system, we have people objecting to the results or contesting the results, even after their legal appeals have run out. So, again,
we don't want people to think this is Venezuela.
Right.
Right. So yeah. It doesn't matter what your party is. Doesn't matter what your policy positions are. Ken's a Donald Trump supporter. I'm a Kamala Harris supporter. He and I differ on a lot of policies, but there's one issue that we can agree on, and that is that these elections are transparent, efficient, effective, and safe.
So I remember the 2000 election when the U.S. Supreme Court decided who won Florida and ultimately who won the presidency. I think it was a watershed moment for us. And I wonder, do you think that's what set off this modern couple of decades of questioning election integrity?
So I don't know if that's what set it off. I give Al Gore a lot of credit for doing exactly what we have been advocating for, and that is when an election is called, you accept the results and you move on. I think in the more recent iterations of claims of election fraud, oftentimes are stimulated and stirred by this growing massive social media network, where conspiracy theories are allowed to run rampant. So I do think the way we communicate, the way we consume information has changed significantly in the last couple of decades. And one of the casualties of that cannot be the integrity of our electoral process.
And let me just say why that's so important, because if you let that catch and spread like a wildfire, what you get is disengagement by the electorate. And instead of having us approach 75% participation, 85% participation, 90% participation, what we get is something south of 50%, and that starts to eat away again at the vibrancy of the system.
We got an email from Francis, who is concerned that wants to know if Trump doesn't win this time around, and we're not going to predict, I'm not going to ask you guys to call the election right now, but how much money, do you guys worry about how much money will be spent verifying these election results, that no matter who wins, we're going to end up in a lot of litigation after November?
I don't think you can change the fact that we are a litigious society, and there are a lot of folks who are spending money now litigating beforehand. And so, Zach and I have used the baseball analogy. I mean, you're going to get close calls, and you're going to get folks who will argue the umpire's call. But sometimes with replays, the call is changed. Sometimes the call is kept in place. That's what we're not going to have a non-litigious election. Particularly if it's close. You know, I would hope either side has a margin of victory that's too big to rig.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you know, it's game over. But I think it's going to come down to, look, we have 3,100 counties. We have hundreds of thousands of precincts. We have 5 to 7 targeted states right now. This is probably going to come down to a very narrow margin, what I used to call the margin of litigation, within the margin of litigation.
Yeah. My favorite fact about how elections get decided is that when there's a tie, and that usually only happens in city races, local races, but when there's ties, every community has a different rule. Some people roll dice. Some people draw from decks of cards. Some people flip coins. The adjudication of ties is wild.
Well, I served on a local board of elections and totally get that. But our sincere hope is that we don't have to flip a coin to decide.
Could you imagine doing that for a state? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I can't imagine Harris and Trump having to draw from a deck of cards.
Yeah.
That would be terrible. But it is a strange way of deciding elections. You know, another listener question that we received earlier was, how important do you think it's going to be for state and local officials to certify the results after November? There's been a lot of consternation, Zach, about whether we're going to get certification from certain officials in certain places.
I am confident that the system will work and that we will see certification broadly. This nonprofit was created in large part in response to what happened after the 2020 election. We saw that actually, you know, there was clear foreshadowing in advance of that election, as some politicians were claiming that the election was rigged even before the election happened, so as to set the stage. We are committed to pushing back against that now, and we are committed to pushing back against that post-election day in November, if need be.
I was going to ask that. So what is your game plan for now until the election? And then what are you guys going to do after the election?
Well, the game plan now is to help people to understand that the system is better when they are engaged. If you're not in the room, you're not in the game. And so I think it's important that folks continue to become poll watchers, poll workers.
Ohio is looking for poll workers.
That's right. Be engaged. You know, there's a biblical saying that those who would do evil love the darkness. You know, and so we each have a responsibility through our human agency and our constitutional right to vote, to be engaged in the system. That's how we speak to those who we elect to govern us. It's a unique system, the one that we've had now for 250 years. And somebody said it, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, you know, it's a republic if we can keep it, you know. And so that really does mean that we have to encourage in engagement. And Zach, and I have partnered up to say, look, we have bipartisan faith in the system. We are shining our lights in the dark corners to make sure it's transparent, and we're willing to be champions of, you know, accept the results in January when it is certified, you know, and all of the back and forth has been exhausted. That person will be the president of the United States, and it's time to get busy to save this republic.
And if I could just add to that, so shining the light in the dark matters. I think what makes this effort particularly effective and important is that we're going to be both shining lights in the dark. And I think that to answer your question, what we intend to do, things like this, to talk to the public. When Zach Space walks into a room and starts to say something about election fraud, or Ken Blackwell walks into a room and starts to say something about election fraud, in and of themselves, it's one thing. But when we do it together, it's setting a standard. It's letting people know that, look, the tribalism that we've begun to experience in this country in recent years has been, in my opinion, shockingly abysmal. I think it has denigrated politics and in many ways our culture. We cannot allow that tribalism to transcend the importance of the election process. So we'll be doing things like writing op-eds, doing interviews like this, and spreading the word any way we can that, to Ken's point, we want you to get engaged. Your vote will count. And, sitting at home and not voting because you don't have faith in the process is not a valid excuse.
That was former Democratic Ohio Congressman Zach Space. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Anna.
And thank you to former Ohio Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, our current Secretary of State Frank LaRose is walking us through how Ohio safeguards our votes. And remember, we're still taking your questions. Give us a call at 614-292-8513.
New from The Embedded Podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about election integrity this hour, and when it comes to protecting our votes, the buck stops with Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. He's Ohio's chief election official and the guy who certifies our results for local, state, and federal races. Secretary LaRose, welcome back to All Sides.
Well, thank you so much, Anna.
And if you hear a little bit of background noise, it's because our Secretary of State is also Sergeant LaRose, and he's actually on duty in North Carolina right now. So thank you in particular for making time.
I appreciate the chance to talk about it. Yeah.
So let's start with how votes get counted here in Ohio. On election night, after the polls close, what happens next?
Well, it's first important to start with the total sort of infrastructure of how elections are organized. In Ohio, it's a completely bipartisan enterprise. That means it's Republicans and Democrats, yes, working together. And they work together quite well, but yeah, they keep each other honest. And so every aspect of elections is overseen by members of the two major parties. But you're right, on election night, when the polls close, the boards of elections start to receive those election day votes from those voting locations. They're, again, driven down to the Board of Elections by a bipartisan team. It's got to be a D and an R in a car together, driving them down there. The very first ballots counted, however, and this is intuitive, are the ones that are already at the board. And that's the early vote ballots and the absentee vote ballots, because they're already there. We've already processed them. They haven't been counted yet, of course. Nothing gets counted until all the polls close at 7:30, but they've been processed. The envelopes have been cut open. The signatures have been verified. They've been flattened out. And don't overlook the importance of that, because for them to go through the scanning machines, they've got to be flattened out. And so when you start to get results at 7:45, 8 o'clock on election night, those are all of those early votes and the absentee votes, the very first ones that are counted. You don't start to get the in-person election day votes until 8:30, 9 o'clock that night. And usually by 10 or 11 on election night, the results are conclusive enough that members of the media and members of the public have started to figure out who was going to win and who's not. Usually for us, though, that's when we're at about 90% complete. It takes us another couple hours until 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. on most elections to get to 100% of the ballots that we have counted. Again, most of Ohio has long since gone to bed at that point. But we don't go to bed on election night, including our 88 boards of elections, until every ballot that we have in our possession, barring those provisional ballots, of course, every ballot that has been received by election day will be counted and reported on election night.
I want to talk a little bit about those mail-in ballots, because an increasing number of people are voting absentee. How are they protected up until they're processed?
Yeah, so it's important for folks to educate themselves on this, because there is a lot of false information out there. But you're right. When people try it, they realize it's a convenient and a secure way to cast a ballot. First of all, in Ohio, you've got to request an absentee ballot. We don't mail them out unsolicited. We do send out the request forms. In fact, those are going to be going out in just really the next couple of weeks. Ohioans will start to receive those absentee ballot request forms. You fill it out, you sign it, that signature gets verified. And then starting 30 days before the election, we'll be mailing out those absentee ballots. Once you return that ballot, and you should do so right away, because sometimes there are delays with the Postal Service, so don't leave it sitting on your kitchen table or the dashboard of your car. Make your choices, sign it, fill out the form correctly, and then mail it back in. Once it's received at the Board of Elections, it's opened by a bipartisan team, a Democrat and a Republican, cut it open. They check the signature. They check the last four of the social or the state driver's license number. They check your address and date of birth, all of those things that have to be verified. They flatten them out. Some press them in a press, but then they put them in their vault. That vault has a double lock system where there's one lock that corresponds with the key maintained by the Democrats, and there's another lock that corresponds with the key maintained by the Republicans. So like those old submarine movies where it takes two keys to launch the torpedo.
I was going to say, this is like the nuclear launch codes.
Yeah. It's great. But it shows how seriously we take that bipartisan chain of custody. You've got to have a Democrat and a Republican to go into that vault. That's where those ballots are kept until they're ready to be counted on election night.
Let's talk about our voting machines. Who has access to those machines, and how do we protect them against cyber attacks and malware?
So it's important first to note that voting machines are never connected to the internet. In fact, if there was one thing I could yell from the rooftops or rent a banner plane to make sure every Ohioan knew this, voting machines are not connected to the internet. They're not capable of being connected to the internet. We don't buy voting machines that have that kind of connectivity. But even that, we check before each election. Every voting machine, hundreds of them, really thousands throughout the state, undergo a full battery of tests called the logic and accuracy test. Again, this is a theme. Republican and Democratic technical experts with their clipboards and their checklists run each machine through those checks. Once they have been checked to make sure that the software that runs the machine matches the factory delivered what's called a hash value to make sure that has not been messed with, the machine has been physically not altered in any way, and then they run a test deck of test ballots, you know, fake ballots to just count and make sure that it's tabulating correctly. A security seal is placed on them. That security seal has a serial number that's recorded in a log, and then they are placed again in a double lock room where they're kept under that double lock and key until they are actually taken out to your voting location, usually the night before or maybe a day or two before the election.
So after the 2020 election, you launched what's called a Public Integrity Division. Can you tell us what it does?
Yeah, so it does a variety of things that this office has long been responsible for, things like campaign finance investigations to make sure that when candidates are raising money and spending those dollars, that they're following the law, that they're filing their reports on time so the public has the transparency that they deserve. We also have some responsibilities in this office that maybe people are not aware of. We're responsible for professional conduct for notaries public. So if you have a neighbor or you yourself have a notary stamp to authenticate documents, we maintain the professional responsibility and sometimes have to take action against people that have maybe been misusing that privilege. Those investigations run through that. The big ticket item and the thing that we're really proud of is that we now have the ability to come alongside our county boards of elections to help them when they need to investigate a report of election fraud or suspicion of election fraud. Now, let me be clear. Voter fraud is rare, and that is a really good thing. But we keep it rare by making sure that people know that if you try to commit voter fraud, we will catch you and you'll face the consequences for it. In the old days, if somebody walked into the county board of elections and said, hey, I saw Mrs. McGillicuddy forging signatures on a petition, right? The best they could do is have a clerk maybe try to investigate it, gather as much information as they could, and send it over to the county leader. The problem is our board of election staff are very professional and purposeful. They're not trained law enforcement professionals. And so in some cases, they wouldn't follow the rules of evidence or place witnesses under oath or all the things that you need to do for evidence to actually be admissible in a court. Well, what we've done is hired retired law enforcement professionals that have that experience. And so now we can assist the county board of elections with conducting that investigation. And so when they turn that over to the county prosecutor, as we did just recently, where we had investigations for fraudulent activity related to petitions, they can actually go into a courtroom and hopefully secure a prosecution if the evidence leads there.
You recently hired three new people for the division, including a former FBI agent and a member of the Secret Service. So you definitely got some heft behind these new hires.
You know, people can retire from law enforcement at a relatively young age. It's the nature of that work. And a lot of them still have a lot of great working years left and a lot to offer. And so we were proud to be able to bring in some late career or mid-career professionals that have a lot of relevant experience. And investigating election crimes is kind of a lot like investigating financial crimes. It's not like there's, you know, forensic evidence with shell casings and hair and, you know, fingerprints and that kind of thing. The crimes related to elections are generally crimes of, you know, paper and computer files and where you have to scrutinize Excel spreadsheets and that kind of thing. And so these individuals that have that experience investigating financial crimes, that really applies directly to being able to investigate and compile evidence related to election crimes as well.
You've taken some heat from the voting rights groups over the last couple of years for removal of inactive voters. Earlier this month, you notified us that you'd be removing 155,000 people from the statewide voter registration database. Can you walk us through that process? How does someone get removed for inactivity?
Well, and not to be too picky with you, Anna, but even the way that the question was worded is not fully correct, because we're not, in most cases, removing people from the voter rolls. In most cases, we're removing bad data, and that's very intentional. We don't want to take voters off the voter rolls. We want to take bad data off the voter rolls. And so we've got a purposeful process that, by the way, is required by both state and federal law. It has been upheld as constitutional by the United States Supreme Court. And it's a process that's been carried out by both Republican and Democratic secretaries of state. So some of these folks that want to make a big fuss about this, in many cases, are really playing politics with this issue, which is unfortunate because this should be something pretty straightforward, really ministerial process. So what the law says in Ohio is that if you have become inactive for a period of 6 years and you haven't responded to the multiple mailings that we've sent you, then you're eligible for removal from the voter rolls. But the way that process starts is that after 2 years of inactivity, we send you a notice. We say, you haven't voted in the last couple of years, and we want to remind you that it's easy to vote in Ohio, so please make sure that you participate in our elections. As long as you do participate sometime in the subsequent 4 years after that, or sign a petition, or update your state driver's license or ID with the BMV or fill out any form, any sign of life to tell our Board of Elections that you're still in Ohio at that address, then we will keep you on the voter rolls. If you have completely dropped off the radar and not participated in the democratic process in any way in 6 years, then yes, we send a final notice and then your process for removal from the voter rolls. The good news, though, is it takes about 2 minutes to get registered to vote again if you care to do that. Now, there are separate processes as well. We have a monthly process to remove deceased voters. That's a pretty straightforward proposition. The Department of Health notifies us of those who have become deceased, and we process those for removal from the voter rolls. We do frequent inspections of the voter rolls to identify non-citizens based on both state and federal databases, because, of course, American elections are only for American citizens. And so we also remove non-citizens. And then there's another process called the NCOA process, National Change of Address. Most of us have moved. We've maybe filled out that little postcard or that form on the Postal Service website to notify the U.S. Postal Service that we're moving. And we use that process as well when people move out of state to remove them from our voter rolls, or when they move within state to help them get their voter registration addresses updated.
I have two follow-up questions. The first is, occasionally you guys do make mistakes, and if someone thinks that they were taken off incorrectly, what do they do? And I guess it may be the same process, I don't know. If somebody has been removed, how do they go about re-registering?
Yeah, so we're really proud of the fact that we've created the most transparent process for this that's ever existed. In the old days, with really all of my predecessors in this office, the list was compiled, it was sent to the boards, and on a certain date, the delete key was pushed and those records were taken out of the voter rolls. And again, that's the way it was done for decades. My brainstorm was, well, we've got this list that is set to be removed. Let's publish it. Let's crowdsource this. And sometimes no good deed goes unpunished. Some people have used that to try to attack me and said, oh, look at these errors. Well, that's a good thing that we can find those errors and correct them. And as we've learned through the process, our boards of elections have been making fewer data entry and human errors as it relates to that. So, yeah, we've put that list out there on Front Street for everybody to see, for voter advocacy groups and civil rights groups and anybody else that's interested to pour through it. And when they find errors, we correct them so that we don't remove voters from the voter rolls unnecessarily. Now, if you have a question whether you've been removed from the voter rolls or not, just simply go to voteohio.gov. Type in your first name, your last name, look up your voter registration. Make sure that your name is spelled correctly. Make sure that your address is correct. Make sure that all that information is in there. And by the way, while you're there, you can sign up to be a poll worker because we're still looking for Ohioans to help us run Election Day.
That was a smooth slide in of the pitch for poll workers there.
Thank you.
No, you get paid. It's not much, but you do get paid.
And, you know, the biggest reward, though, is when you go home at 7:45, 8, 8:30 on election night and you watch those results scroll across the screen or be reported by your favorite radio station, you're going to have a good feeling knowing that you were part of the team of over 30,000 Ohioans that just delivered another free and fair election for the people of Ohio. And yeah, you're right. You do get paid. Some professionals can actually get continuing education credits. Lawyers, social workers, librarians, accountants, realtors, and many others can actually receive continuing education credits for signing up to be a poll worker as well. And 17-year-olds, Ohio high school students, 17-year-olds can sign up to be a poll worker as well. What a great thing to put on a college application that you served as a poll worker before you were even old enough to vote.
That is pretty nerdy, but that is cool. Final question for you is, it sounds like you're pretty solidly convinced that Ohio will have a free and fair election this November.
No doubt about it. And it's because of the work that my team does and that tens of thousands of very dedicated Ohioans do. These are your neighbors. They are the members of the Democratic and Republican Party and people that are affiliated with no party at all who devote their time to doing this work of running elections. We've got the right safeguards in place. I was on a panel just this weekend with the Florida Secretary of State, and we were joking that it's no surprise that Ohio and Florida are really, in many ways, a national model for running accurate, secure, but also convenient elections, it's because our two states have been in the national spotlight for decades. We've gotten very good at this. I hold Ohio up as the national standard for making it both easy to vote and hard to cheat. And ultimately, that's what really all of us should want, regardless of politics.
And we've never had a hanging Chad controversy. No offense to the fine people of the state of Florida.
There are no more Chads in Ohio. Those have gone away a long time ago. But, you know, there is a lot of false information out there. So maybe take the time to educate yourself. We've got a website at voteohio.gov, a page, voteohio.gov/secure. It's an infographic that goes through all of these things. We all have that family member that shares whatever they've seen on YouTube or whatever they've seen on social media, and a lot of that stuff is false. So maybe help to educate them, because when voters are confident in the security of their elections, they're more likely to participate. And ultimately, this is about driving high levels of voter participation.
That was Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Anna.
Coming up, we're answering your election questions. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from The Embedded Podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about election integrity this hour, and joining me now is the executive director of Ohio's League of Women Voters, Jen Miller. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Secretary of State Frank LaRose just told us he's confident Ohio will have free and fair elections this fall. Are you confident?
I am. We have a lot of safeguards built into place, and the League has actually been a champion of these for a long time. So while some folks might think of us as really being a champion of access, we are. There's a lot of advocacy that's gone around the bipartisan control of elections, making sure there's always a Republican key and a Democratic key, that the machines are not hooked up to the voting machines themselves, are not hooked to the internet. Just last week, we had someone watch the new testing of machines. We have advocates in the field who go to the logic and accuracy testing, watch the certification and audit process. And all of this is so that we can be of witness to voters that we see these safeguards working.
As I said, this hour, we want to hear your voting questions, and Jen is here to answer them. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513. We got an email from a man named Steve who would like to know what protections, if any, Ohio has for its poll workers, particularly as Secretary LaRose just said we need poll workers. But what if you're concerned about violence, retaliation?
Yeah, so first and foremost, poll workers are the backbone of our democracy. They are so important, and we honor our poll workers. They are hardworking public servants. And so we do need poll workers. And keep in mind that there is a balance of poll workers, of parties. And I think the number one thing we can do to protect poll workers is to remind everyone all the safeguards that are in place. Part of the reason why sometimes folks question election results or have some sort of instinct to intimidate or it is about a vacuum of information. We need to know that our elections are secure. So programs like this do a big job of that. But also every board of elections has safety. They have safety plans in place. They have relationships with law enforcement. And then also on the outside, we have nonpartisan groups like Election Protection, which we help run. We have what we call peacekeepers, which are folks trained in de-escalation. Often they're social workers or faith leaders that are on the outside trying to bring that temperature down. But poll worker safety is actually everyone's responsibility, because at the end of the day, we all need to be promoting good information about how elections work and why they're safe. And remember that poll workers are balanced inside of those boards of elections, inside of those polling locations. So we have not seen any direct violence towards poll workers. And we do know that boards of elections and the Secretary of State are really always looking at security and safety.
We have a question from Mary about absentee voting, and I think this is something that we should cover. She says it can be stressful and limiting, and also the mail can take forever, and people worry about filling them out incorrectly or having it not count. You know, the Secretary of LaRose walked us through how boards of elections secure those ballots, but we should talk about, like, what happens if your ballot is flagged? What recourse do we have if the county is like, no, I don't think that's your signature?
Yeah, so let's go through some of the security and then we'll answer that. And if I don't answer it, hold me accountable. So first and foremost, one of the best ways to return your absentee ballot is the drop box. Remember that drop boxes are surveilled 24/7 with a video. They're emptied by at least one Republican and one Democrat. And they are about 600 pounds. They are bomb-proof. They are fireproof. They are incredibly secure. Let's also keep in mind, everyone, that absentee ballots are, you have to prove yourself twice. First, when you request that ballot, and then again when you return it. So it's extra secure in that way. When a voter wants to request one, fill one out, return it, they need to follow their instructions step by step. There are very good instructions there. If they have questions, they should call the Board of Elections. They can call the League. They can call the Election Protection Hotline, 866-OUR-VOTE. You can track your absentee ballot, and I encourage you to do that because that can help you know when it's coming or if you're putting it in the mail, if it's been returned. It can also help you track whether it's been accepted. And finally, you want to make sure you, while it's not required to have a phone number or email address on your forms, like your voter registration or absentee request forms, you want to do that so that if there's a problem, the Board of Elections doesn't have to use snail mail to contact you, that they can call you or email you. If you have a question about your signature, then you would go in and have to prove your identity. But most importantly is if you're going to vote absentee, don't wait to the last minute because it is timely. Follow all those instructions. Track your ballot. If you have any questions or concerns, call the Board of Elections or the League or Election Protection.
So Ohio law now requires that we show a government ID to vote. What's acceptable and what's not?
Yeah, so not even all government IDs are acceptable. I think one of the ones that bothers me the most is that county veteran IDs no longer count. And a lot of veterans used county veteran IDs. So you can use an Ohio-issued driver's license or an Ohio-issued state ID that you would get at the BMV. You can use a passport book or card. You can use an Ohio National Guard card or a U.S. military card or a U.S. veteran ID.
Okay, so U.S. veteran ID, yes. Local veteran ID, no.
Correct.
And if your address on your ID no longer matches where you live, that's okay.
That's okay.
So yep. They shouldn't be turning you away for that.
Correct. And sometimes, let's keep in mind that poll workers work really hard, and there's a lot to remember, and sometimes they get confused. And so advocate for yourself, but then also call 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E. And folks like me are checking that. And we use that to step in real time to make sure if we keep hearing the same wrong messages from a polling location, that we can talk to that Board of Elections. But we also use it to think long term about how we can improve poll worker training or other policies on election day.
What if you leave your wallet at home and you don't have time to come back later?
So you can absolutely vote absentee. But you will have to go back into the Board of Elections with your proper ID to make so that your absentee ballot counts.
But you don't have to do a day of.
Yeah, sorry. I said absentee. la, 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 la. You can absolutely vote provisional. If you show up to early vote center or you show up at your polling location on election day, you can vote provisionally. I'm sorry, crew. And you'll get instructions that you're not going to want to throw away. You're going to want to take those instructions, and it will tell you how to make sure your provisional ballot counts. You'll have to bring your ID to the Board of Elections.
And I want to remind everyone that you must be registered by October 7th. So October 7th is the deadline if you want to vote in this November's election. We do not have same-day registration. Like other states, you cannot just show up and vote.
That's true. That's true.
You may wish for same-day registration, but it is not the law in the state of Ohio.
That's true.
You know, we got a question from Anne, who wants to know how much responsibility do you think political leaders will have for ensuring election integrity?
Yeah, I'm sad that we have to ask this question. At the end of the day, every elected official has their first duty is to uphold the law. And folks like Secretary LaRose, his first duty is to uphold the U.S. and Ohio constitutions when it comes to voting. And so we expect candidates and elected officials to respect the process and uphold the law. And we have seen, you know, in 2020, there was a lot of questions about the election, but ultimately the law was upheld. You know, there was many, many cases in court, which is when you have questions about election integrity, when you have questions about the count, those go to courts. And those courts over and over and over again upheld the results. And so it doesn't matter what branch of government you're in, your first job as an elected official is to uphold the law.
I want to ask about college students, because we are here on the campus of Ohio State University, and the Buckeye State is home to thousands of in-state and out-of-state students. Can you vote where you go to school?
Yes, absolutely. So college students, you are special because you get to choose what address you register and vote at. So this is something you want to decide. You need to decide before the voter registration deadline. And you need, if you're in a different state, you could have two different voter registration deadlines that you need to consider, the one in your home state and Ohio's October 7th registration deadline. So first and foremost, register where you want to vote and then make your voting plan. Are you going to vote in person at the early vote center, by absentee or by mail? And make sure you get that vote and that it counts.
Yeah, and that goes if you are an Ohio student who is heading off to college in, say, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, any of those critical swing states, even if you're going to our neighbor up north, you can vote in the state where your college is because you are technically living there at the time.
Yeah, just make sure that you have the IDs that you need in whichever state you vote in. So here in Ohio, if you register to vote here, you need to have one of those Ohio IDs. So, like, let's just pretend that you grew up in the state up north and you're coming to Ohio State for school, because who wouldn't, right? And so if that's the case, you can't use your Michigan ID. You would have to get a state ID. And keep in mind that
if you had a passport, you could use that.
That's true. That's true.
But not everyone has a passport.
That's true. But also keep in mind that if you get a free state ID here in Ohio, your out-of-state driver's license is no longer valid. So if you're going to vote in Ohio, you don't have a passport, you're going to go to the BMV and get an ID, even though it's not free, I would suggest getting a driver's license.
That makes a lot of sense, because you don't want to be left without a valid driver's license.
Yeah, that's, and then driving your car.
Oh my goodness.
Anna is like thinking about her future kids. And how that would stress her out.
We got some time. We got a solid decade till my oldest gets to vote. Actually, no, wait. 8 years. Oh, my gosh. She's going to be 10. So we have 8 years. Never mind. I'm getting old. But one of the fascinating things is if you are 17, though, if you are not yet old enough to vote, you can still go be a poll worker.
So a few things. First off, if you are 17 right now, as long as you're going to be 18 by election day, get registered. You can vote. Secondly, yes, poll workers who are 17 can vote. You know, if you are a junior or senior in high school, you get to skip school. You get to see democracy up front. You get paid. And it's a great opportunity. That's called youth at the booth.
Yeah, I think it's kind of neat. So you don't actually have to be old enough to vote to be a poll worker.
Yeah.
My final question is just, are you worried at all it feels like a lot of people are anxious about what's going to happen November 6th and beyond.
So I believe in democracy. I believe in the people of Ohio, and I believe in public servants. But here's the thing. If you're worried, the answer is not to disengage. You know, make sure you vote. Make sure you become a poll worker. Remember that boards of elections meetings are public. They're open to the public. So you can learn a little bit more about their security plans. You can go see them test the machines. You can watch the post-election audit. A lot of times you can even do it online. So there are ways that you can be engaged. And also just know that groups like the League that don't endorse parties or candidates are there being your watchdog as well.
That was Jen Miller, Executive Director of Ohio's League of Women Voters. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Don't forget to register to vote before the October 7th deadline. Thank you for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.